Hola! Welcome to the Laughing Place podcast. I'm Doobie Mosley, the owner of LaughingPlace.com, the co-owner, along with my wife, Rebecca, and I am one of your hosts for this weekly podcast we're restarting here on LaughingPlace.com. Now, some of you may already be familiar with the Laughing Place podcast from last year. We had 18 episodes between November 05 and April 06 before it went on an extended hiatus. Well, we've made some changes for this new version, so sitting here with me today and every week are Fanboy and Captain John. So before we dive into this week's topics, I think we should tell our listeners a little bit about ourselves. Let's start with you, Fanboy.
Hi, apparently I'm Fanboy. I've been a Disney fan my whole life, but I like to think of myself as sort of an educated Disney fan. I also like looking at the business side of it and seeing what kind of magic is behind the numbers and knowing the story behind each product we create and the environment it was created in. I love the theme parks. I love the movies. I even love ABC Family.
That's a fan. And next is Captain John, who gets his name because he's a huge fan of Captain Jack. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, Captain?
Ahoy there. I'm Captain John, and I'll just keep it simple. I'm a fan of pirates. I'm a fan of the theme parks. And that's pretty much it. I'll keep it short and sweet.
No problem. And as I said, I am Doobie Mosley, the co-owner of Laughing Place. If you've been to Laughing Place, you already know something about me. But I've been a Disney fan for about the past 11 years. I grew up in L.A. going to Disneyland about once a year. And then in 1995, at the age of 26, I went on Memorial Day weekend and something clicked. And I've been going probably about three or four times a week ever since. I lived near Disneyland and then moved out here to Disney World about 3 years ago. And I love the theme parks, I love the big films, and I'm also a big fan of Disney history and Disney trivia, which we'll probably cover at some point during these podcasts. But for our first episode here we are early in 2007. We're going to take a look forward at some of the major films coming up this year. And the first film, Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End. And it's going to star Johnny Depp, Orlando Bloom, Keira Knightley will be back, Jeffrey Rush, the whole gang is back, Jerry Bruckheimer, Gore Verbinski. It sounds like a recipe for much more money. Jonathan, Captain John, you're the man when it comes to pirates, so why don't you give us a little overview of what to expect in the third episode of Pirates?
Expect a lot of very fascinating backstory to be revealed. There's a lot of different twists that, I mean, number two was definitely a very big setup to the third, so expect a lot of action and very interesting story developments.
Okay. And as I'm sure our listeners know, Pirates of the Caribbean has just been huge for Disney. Remember when the first one came out and people were kind of like, they're doing a movie based on pirates? Because The Country Bears was not exactly a hit, The Haunted Mansion was not exactly a hit, and it was kind of laughable. And that movie made over $300 million. The sequel, Dead Man's Chest, made over $400 million and was the number one movie of 2006. Fanboy, what do you figure we're going to get for this next one?
A good nap. I don't know what I was missing with Pirates 2. I kept looking over to all the people in the theater being like, can you explain this to me? I'm missing something. I mean, I love the attraction. I know, Doobie, you're not the biggest fan. And I even liked the first one. But the second one just seemed like it was lacking something. It wasn't that I was lacking action, because action just kept to seem to go on and on for no particular reason. I didn't really care about anybody. No one was particularly likable. And it just seemed like Johnny Depp's character just became a caricature of himself. So I don't really know. I'll see it because I see everything, but I'm not – my expectations are low.
Okay. And I was there right next to you during Dead Man's Chest, and we both kept just looking at it. They're going, what is going on here? But everyone else in the theater seemed to have a great time, and $423 million, they must have done something right. I can't say I'm looking forward to it, but I'll be there right next to you.
I am looking forward to one thing. As a Disney shareholder, I am very much looking forward to the release of this movie, because that can justify us making some good movies that might not make as much money.
Well, one thing about the sequel is that it did sort of go over sort of oddly for some people. Like, some of the fans, you know, really, really liked it. Some of them, you know, were like, you know, that was sort of strange. But because of the big cliffhanger at the end, I really think that number three will pull in the people who still thought it was sort of meh anyway, just because they want to figure out what in the world is going on. Just because the second one was that much of a confusing type of deal.
This isn't the first time they've made a trilogy where the second one's a cliffhanger. I mean, Empire Strikes Back, Back to the Future 2, and in both of those trilogies, the second movie was my favorite. So that's not exactly encouraging.
Well, you mentioned maybe the success of this will allow Disney to do some other movies which maybe don't make as much money but really need to be made, which brings up Meet the Robinsons.
You're cruel.
Which is Disney's next, I guess, Pixar. They own Pixar, so everything's in-house now, but non-Pixar animated feature, Meet the Robinsons. It's the story of Lewis, who's an orphan, who dreams of finding his family. His journey takes on an unexpected turn when a mysterious stranger named Wilbur Robinson whisks him away to a world where anything is possible. The future. Doesn't that just sound wonderful? What's your feeling on Meet the Robinson?
Well, I agree the movie needed to be made because Michael Eisner needed a negotiating tactic for Pixar when he greenlit this picture. You know, I read the book, and it's a nice short story. I don't know how you're going to make 90 minutes out of it, but at least it'll be in Disney Digital 3D, so I'll have things poking my eye out.
Captain?
It basically just sounds like everything you could possibly think of in a movie, so, you know, somebody's gonna like it. It seems like there's so much different things going on that I don't know what to think about it quite yet. It just seems like everything.
I remember when Treasure Planet came out, and there was all this talk how sci-fi animation never flies, and then Treasure Planet didn't fly. Has there been one since that's been a success?
Does Lilo and Stitch count?
No.
But I think of this movie as more like Lilo and Stitch in that it's a sci-fi comedy than a strictly Titan AE, Treasure Planet, Atlantis kind of movie. And, you know, I will keep an open mind because I remember when Kingdom of the Sun, Emperor's New Groove came out, everyone was like, oh, this has all these production problems, it's going to be a disaster. And it really became a sleeper hit. And in fact, still to this day, it's one of the top-rated movie presentations on Disney Channel, spun off a direct-to-video sequel, of course, TV series. So, you know, I will keep an open mind because you never really know until you see it on the screen.
I like Emperor's New Groove. You like Emperor's New Groove, Captain?
It's fun.
It's fun. I think it was the funniest of, you know, that period between Little Mermaid and Treasure Planet or whatever.
It's an interesting style for a Disney animated movie. There's not really any others like it at all. Very fast.
Came across as very Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
In a good way.
Oh, speaking of Warner Brothers, didn't the creator of Scooby-Doo just die the other day?
Yeah, and he also started off as a Disney animator. So that's
that's sad. My namesake. I guess I owe him a debt for my name.
Yeah, you know what caused the death?
What?
Those meddling kids.
And their mangy butt. Chicken Little did about $135 million. I like to talk about the numbers. Forgive me if you don't like to hear about the numbers. Chicken Little, Disney's last and maybe first 3D movie, if you don't count Dinosaur, did $135 million. Meet the Robinsons, what do you think?
Coming out in March, I'm thinking high 100s.
High 100s being like 109 or 199?
199.
Yeah. Captain?
I'd say probably it would make around 80 mil.
Ouch.
Yeah. I think it'll do well
I think it'll be like Atlantis in that regard.
I think it'll do well overseas because every movie that doesn't seem to be enjoyed in America will do well overseas. Like Speed 2. Remember that movie?
I like that movie.
Yeah. No one saw it here. Bazillions of dollars overseas.
Which is ironic because it took place on a cruise ship that went
overseas.
Yeah. Okay. Ratatouille, June 29th, which I guess is the big animated feature because that does come from the Pixar wing of Disney. Directed by Brad Bird, who did The Incredibles. I'm sure everyone is familiar with the story. It's about a rat named Ratty.
Or Remy, as the case may be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Apparently, he doesn't know.
Wait, is it Remy or Rennie? Because I have Rennie here.
R-E-M-Y, Remy.
Okay, so N is next to M, I typoed. His name is Rennie. He wants to be a chef, like every rat does. And what do you think?
I know a lot of people are looking for this one to fail as sort of some Greek tragedy, but I'm going to give it a shot. I don't necessarily think it's going to do well, but from a me enjoying it perspective, which is second, I guess, I really will give it a shot. Brad Bird hasn't done a bad thing yet, from Iron Giant, which was a sleeper hit, again, to The Incredibles. I'm going to keep an open mind, although I don't know if I'm going to see this or Live Free or Die Hard on opening weekend.
I know what we're going to see. There is no question about that. And it's not Ratatouille. Gotta have the priorities. Captain, what do you think about Ratatouille? Are you excited about this one?
I am excited. I'm always looking forward to every Pixar. I always, you know, They're consistently you know, good to me. But with this, it seems that the plot behind it might be a little bit too odd for people to just generally accept.
The plot seems a little familiar. Isn't there another animated feature starring a rat or something?
Flushed away from the DreamWorks, let's just do in whatever Pixar, or Pixar doing whatever DreamWorks, I don't know, way of life. Ants, Bug's Life, and
Shark's Tale,
and Finding Nemo. It's just humorous.
Let's see, Cars did... Was Cars considered a disappointment, you think, or was Cars a success?
My understanding from insiders is that, well, initially it might have been considered a little bit of a disappointment. The merchandising end and the international box office was bigger than expected. So in the end, internally, they're considering it a success.
Okay. And you figure Ratatouille, same story?
We'll see. It's a very crowded summer. We've got Harry Potter and Spider-Man 3. I don't know what to expect.
So many sequels to choose from.
Like Live Free or Die Harder.
Spider-Man 3. Shrek 3 is sometime around there. Yeah, there's just a bunch.
It's a rough market.
Pirates of the Caribbean 3. I mean, there's like so many sequels. It's like, wow.
Speaking of sequels, the most anticipated film of 2007 to come out of the Walt Disney Company, or any company, at least as far as two of the people sitting at this table, would be National Treasure, The Book of Secrets, which is what?
I think it's a movie based on those books they have at the Vacation Club kiosks. Oh, wait, that's the Book of Best Kept Disney Secrets. My bad.
No, this is the title of the next Harry Potter book, National Treasure and the Book of Secrets.
You're joking? I know nothing about Harry Potter.
So. No, well, book two was Chamber of Secrets, so when I first read that, I thought, oh, it reminds me of Harry Potter. But yeah. No, it sounds like fun. The first movie was really nice. The script was above average. It was very snappy. I like snappy stuff.
What's very exciting about National Treasure, The Book of Secrets, is they seem to have gotten the entire cast back from the most important person in the cast, Justin Bartha, who made the single best line in the history of National Treasure films, which was... Why didn't that stuff ever happen to me?
Right. I wasn't sure. There's so many good lines in that movie.
Yeah, that's the good one. That's when the movie...
For those of you wondering, you might have heard of Jump the Shark, where a TV show reaches a point when it's no longer relevant, based on when Fonzie jumped over a shark in Happy Days. Also, things like having a baby or getting married are also common references. And so when we're watching the movie and the hero kisses a heroine, we're like, oh, boy. And then the guy says, why does that stuff never happen to me? And Doobie and I both looked over each other and we yelled, it jumped back! Because the movie made fun of the fact that it just went with convention. And that made it perhaps the best movie of that. Definitely calendar year, maybe fiscal year, too.
Better than even Racing Stripes, which is quite an accomplishment.
But see, here's the question. What is the Book of Secrets?
Well, the Book of Secrets apparently are, or at least related to, the 18 pages missing from Abraham Lincoln's diary. And that's what this one's going to kind of center around, instead of the Declaration of Independence was the first one.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yes.
And this one's going to be about 18 pages missing from Lincoln's diary. And I'm really excited about this one because... The first one was great. However, in the back of my mind, I've got this deep fear that it's not even going to come close to living up to it. What do you think?
It's going
to
pull a Pirates 2 on you, is what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm a little nervous, but that's not going to stop me from being excited about it. Because, you know, the nice thing about National Treasure is you're not expecting something really huge. You're just expecting something fun. So it has a little bit more leeway than...
Well, with the first one, though, I wasn't even expecting something fun. I was just, here's the Disney movie I have to see.
The thing I find interesting is the man that came up with National Treasure is now head of production for the studios. He replaced Nina Jacobson, effectively. And he also came up with Rocket Man, so he's one for two. But it'll be interesting, you know, it's sort of his baby, so I think it's going to get a lot of care. I just hope it doesn't get a little too much love and care.
Yeah, too many... Chefs in the kitchen.
Speaking of Ratatouille.
All right, well, those are all the major movies coming out this year, but there are four others that we should at least touch on. And the first one, in preparing for this, I read about this, and it really got me excited for the first time, I think, over a movie that's at least in the category of romantic comedy, and that's Enchanted, which is what?
It's a movie that takes place in starting in the character world in a traditionally animated movie musical like Beauty and the Beast or something of that vein, and due to an evil witch who looks surprisingly like the hag from Snow White, gets transported into the real world, and which features Amy Adams and Patrick Dempsey from ABC's Grey's Anatomy. And it really is actually going to be, I think, the fall tentpole of the studios. And I know Consumer Products is really excited. One thing that they are doing, though, is they're making sure that this princess, Gisella, I believe, is not considered a Disney princess. She won't appear in Disney Princesses on Ice or anything like that. She's being kept separate, at least for the theatrical and home video run.
Why is that, do you think?
Well, I think part of it has to do with Amy Adams and sort of contractual rights issues. I know that we're doing we have to do a lot of that stuff with Johnny Depp. But also, because it is sort of a satire on the traditional animated film, they don't want to just cheapen that princess by bringing her over. It's she's not just Belle and Ariel. She's a caricature of that, and bringing that in would just sort of, I don't know. But it's interesting because you know that princess brand is so big that sometimes people make decisions not based on creativity and based on dollar signs. And I'm surprised that they're really sticking to their guns on this.
That sounds good. Sounds good. Now, the song, the thing that really got me excited about this is it has songs from Alan Menken and Stephen Schwartz, who, of course, did Pocahontas, which has some of my favorite Disney music. Does that get you excited, Captain?
It gets me excited because, you know, musicals aren't very common anymore, and they just sort of fell off the face of the earth, and, you know, it's a mystery. I mean, musicals are fun.
I can't think of any big Disney musicals this year at all, like on Disney Channel or anything. I don't know what happened to that brand.
See, that's what's so strange. It's like they disappear, and then all of a sudden they're like now the big thing. It's like musicals like came back from the dead. It's great.
Yeah, well, you don't just want to stick to the status quo. You want to get your head in the game, and I think we just lost Doobie.
Are you okay over there?
I thought this was officially a High School Musical free zone. Isn't it?
No,
it's not.
No,
it's not. It's not. That you cannot have Disney in 2006 and 7 without High School Musical. Another one coming up this year is it's another superhero comes to the big screen. These are always huge. Spider-Man was huge. Superman Returns is huge. Is there any doubt that Underdog is going to be the big summer movie this year?
No doubt in my mind. I just hope that the creators of Super Pup. the pilot that was created after the Superman TV series realized that someone is just totally ripping them off. Never mind.
You saw Super Pup.
I did. Nothing says magic like arf arf in a way.
Wait, Super Pup really is real. He's not just joking. They made a pilot with Rubberhead, for lack of a better word, for Superman during the TV show back in probably the 50s, and it was never released, but they put it on the new Superman Ultimate DVD collection, and it was absolutely atrocious and hilarious.
If any of you folks remember on Disney Channel, they used to have, like, Welcome to Pooh Corner and Dumbo Circus. It's like that, except with bad acting. And you really appreciate Rubberhead acting after seeing Super Pup. I remember one scene where this gentleman goes, the criminal's trying to run out of the hideout, and he tries and gets the door, but he can't see the door because it's he's in a Rubberhead suit, so he's just sort of like grabbing around trying to find the doorknob. It's not Disney, but I think it belongs on the laughingplace.com recommended viewing list.
we'll see. I wonder how the more realistic Underdog will be like accepted, because it's such, like, in comparison to the cartoon and everything, it's just such an interesting.
Well, Scooby-Doo, I mean, the thing that comes to my mind is Scooby-Doo, and Scooby-Doo certainly did well, despite the fact I think it scored about a negative 10 on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, so.
It was quite a hit, enough for a sequel, so.
Yeah, unfortunately.
The last two movies coming out this year, under the Disney label anyway, are Bridge to Terabithia. Did I pronounce that right?
That's not shocking. It's Bridge to Terabithia from our friends at Walden Media, who also made Chronicles of Narnia.
And this one actually sounds a little similar to Chronicles of Narnia. There's this kingdom that is created that they can go to.
I remember reading the book as a kid. It was one of those books, like Narnia, that every kid had to read at some point for some reason. And so, but what I find interesting about this movie is Walden Media announced an agreement with Fox, so they're really creating a family studio with News Corp, and all of Walden Media's output, besides Narnia, which is already committed to Disney, will come out through Fox. So there might be a little bit of bad blood between Walden Media and Disney on this, and while I have no doubt Narnia will transcend that because money has a way to do that, I'm curious to see how Walden Media will do with this, because they've done a lot of medium films with Disney, like Holes and Around the World in 80 Days. Holes doing great, Around the World in 80 Days doing rotten. So it'll be really interesting to see how this plays out.
What's weird is that it seems like a really big project, but yet I only heard about it like 5 days ago. It's very strange. It's like, what happened here?
Well, it comes out in mid-February. Typically, the big films don't exactly come out in mid-February, do they?
But it looks like, you know, it looks like there's definitely mind behind it, you know, special effects and all that.
Someone forgot about Teacher's Pet, the movie.
Got that right.
Yeah.
What's missing from the slate this year is Miracle, The Rookie, We Are Marshall, although that wasn't done by Disney, but it might as well have been, Glory Road. Instead, we get The Game Plan, which is not a true story. It stars The Rock of wrestling fame, and he plays a quarterback who discovers he has a 7-year-old daughter, and it's about his adventures juggling parties, practices, and dates with the newfound ballet classes, bedtime stories, and dolls, as the Disney publicity machine puts it. Is there any buzz about this one?
The Pacifier did great, and I know we're replacing the lead, but maybe the sequel will do fantastic, too. It's another one of those Kindergarten Cop movies. Exactly.
Kindergarten Cop, The Pacifier, it's like the big, big, physically big action stars have to do something that shows they can work with kids in a comedy. Yeah.
And they always say, well, I want something my kids can watch. And that's great, and I'm sure he's getting paid a lot of money, and hopefully he'll be better than in The Scorpion King. But it is what it is. I know he got hurt while making it. So
this is the one where he broke his arm or something?
He broke his arm in this family comedy as opposed to, you know, WWE like, wow. Wrestling or...
Which is real.
When you wish upon a star.
What did that mean?
I don't know.
All right. Any thoughts whatsoever about The Game Plan? I didn't think so.
No, okay. Not really, no.
And that's the slate for 2007, so we hope we got you guys excited about what's coming up from the Walt Disney Company this year. I know I'm excited, mostly for National Treasure, which we have to wait all the way until December 21st for. That's kind of sad, but...
It's a long time.
It'll be worth it, which is actually 2008 as far as fanboy over here is concerned.
The year begins in October, just so you know.
So, and that's the slate. Why don't we move on to another topic here? Okay, so our next topic here is Walt Disney World, which I'm sure we're all excited to be talking about.
Woo! And
mostly the captain. And there's two new attractions at Walt Disney World right now that have opened relatively recently, both based on everyone's favorite little clownfish. And our resident Disney World expert over here, Fanboy, is going to tell us a little bit about him.
Well, first of all, we've got the Seas of Nemo and Friends at Epcot, which is home to the Seas of Nemo and Friends at Epcot, name of the building and the name of the ride. And you board Clanmobiles, which is an Omnimover, and you go around and you see the first part's a dark ride featuring a lot of projection on Scrim, and you go around and see this. Basically, it's a sequel to Finding Nemo, but he does everything that's in Finding Nemo. They encounter jellyfish, the anglerfish, which is a Kuka robot and is the effect that WDI probably spent a lot of time working on. And Kuka, for those of you who don't know, are those little machines that make cars in Detroit. And so they put a little anglerfish on it so he can zip around and do all sorts of animation. But he's been having a little difficulty getting going. But in any case, you go through the old tunnel, which is the EAC, and they've covered up the windows and now project Crush, Squirt, and Nemo going riding through the EAC.
And I hear they're riding through the EAC.
They really are riding through the EAC.
Okay.
They've never been in the EAC before.
Welcome to the EAC.
Moving on, you then go into the sort of circular part, where, if you remember the old ride where you go through the tank, or living environment, and you see, using Pepper's ghost, Nemo and Marlin, Squirt, Mr. Ray, and all the gang inside the living environment, the tank. So it was a sort of modest-based attraction that really was driven by the being able to do Pepper's Ghost into a tank. And it seemed to be doing really well for Epcot.
Did the guests seem to be enjoying it quite a bit?
They seemed to be they seem to be enjoying it. You know, Disney, whenever they open up an attraction, does a guest satisfaction measurement survey, and that hasn't happened yet, so we started to get like a percentage yet from our sources. But they seem to be enjoying it. The nice thing about it is it's really high capacity. So last thing they built was something like Soarin', where you can probably get, I don't know, 1,300, 1,400 people per hour, whereas in an Omnimover like that, you can get over 2,000. So while the lines might not look long, it still is. Still more people are riding that per day than Soarin'.
And is it bringing in quite a few people into the pavilion formerly known as the Living Seas?
It is, and the interesting thing to me, though, is that Turtle Talk is kind of getting the life sucked out of it. People go into the building and don't see Turtle Talk. And so what used to have two or three show waits, now it's at most a 1.5 show wait. And the scary thing is, you know, they're building a new theater for Turtle Talk. And it'll be hard to see how that sort of plays out in terms of signage and guest flow. You never really know.
They might make it more obvious to people.
Right. So it'll be interesting to see how that comes out. And that theater is actually what used to be theater, one of the Seas Theater, and it rained, and it rained, and it rained, the Deluge Theater, and the other theater actually became part of the ride. So both of those theaters are no longer in existence.
What's going to happen to the current spot?
The current spot is going to be converted into another exhibit. They're going to take some of the exhibits that were in where the Turtle Talk Theater was. Oh, actually, the queue for the Turtle Talk Theater. If you know the Sea Base, there's different pods throughout the building.
Right.
One of the pods is going to become a queue line for Turtle Talk, and then you're going to go through what used to be a wall and into the theater. So they're going to move the exhibits that used to be in that pod, while keeping some stuff there to entertain you while you're in line, and move that to the old Turtle Talk Theater. Turtle Talk will actually be closed for a couple weeks so they can bring everything over, because they're not making a new system. This old system's coming to the new theater.
Captain, have you ridden the attraction yet?
Yes, I have ridden the attraction.
What's your opinion of it?
It's very nice to see that Imagineering could do something that's a little bit more just there. You know, usually you've been seeing a lot of, you know, big budget attractions. Well, this is, it's does its job very nicely, and it takes up, you know, the space. So it's not a waste of, you know, there's a ride there that is very simple, but yet it can be appreciated because, you know, or else there'd be nothing there.
I like it. I think it's a nice addition to the park. As Captain said, it's good to have an attraction that's not necessarily a spectacle. And I definitely like
the effect at the end, right?
I definitely like that. That it can bring through a lot of people because we don't need more lines and with Soarin' and its capacity issues. But it is a lot of fun. I think it's—I don't know—in a way, it feels like a lot of tricks put together with the word I can never pronounce right.
Kuka?
The Kuka. Okay, I can pronounce it. I can't remember it though. With the Kuka and then the jellyfish and the EAC. And then the Pepper's Ghost. There's just so many different kinds of special effects that almost feel thrown together. I think it works overall.
It's like the non-scary Haunted Mansion.
But I don't know. They come together better in the Haunted Mansion than they do here. You know, I don't notice effects of the Haunted Mansion. Okay. I'm just seeing an attraction.
Right.
When I'm on Nemo, I feel like I'm looking at a lot of special effects, and I shouldn't. But it comes together at the end. The finale's fantastic and makes everything else not even matter.
And to me, it comes across. Like, you know, they knew they needed to do something with the seas. They knew they had Finding Nemo as a big hit. They knew they could do Pepper's Ghost. They wanted to test Kuka. And so they just kept going. They kind of just – it was an attraction based on its time. I don't know how well it's going to hold up long run. And it'll be interesting to see what happens to that building in 20 years.
Okay. And the other new attraction – recent new attraction in Disney World, also based on Nemo, is Finding Nemo the Musical. And before we talk about that, let's listen to a clip from it. So that was a clip from Finding Nemo the Musical, which is playing over at the Theater in the Wild in Dino Land in Disney's Animal Kingdom at the Walt Disney World Resort. And
in Lake Buena Vista, Florida, on United States of America, on Earth, in the Milky Way, in the space-time continuum.
And I think it's a great show. In fact, I've seen a lot of Disney shows since 1995 when I became a fan, and up until I saw this one, I would have said Disneyland's Festival of Fools was my favorite. And to me, this one even surpasses that. This is one amazing show that's a little bit artsy, but still completely accessible for people like me. And I highly recommend everyone see it. What do you think?
I was amazingly surprised. I don't want to bag on anybody, but since Creative Entertainment was founded, we've had Aladdin, which was okay. We've had Snow White, which was dreadful. We've had Twice Charmed, which was bad from everything I can hear.
I'm not a fan.
So I wasn't expecting much, but so when I saw it, it probably like 15 minutes into the show, I'm like, oh, wait a minute, this is actually good. And so I had to see it again to be like, oh, wait, I like this. Because I was not expecting anything, and I'm very happy that, especially with a lot of the changes they made, I think the show just keeps getting better.
I completely agree. What do you think, Captain?
It's just great to see I like the puppet aspect of it. I love seeing artsy stuff. So the fact that they integrated the music and everything to something that wasn't a musical.
I didn't really describe the show. Why don't you talk about the puppets and how it's presented?
Okay, throughout the show, they turn Finding Nemo, like the entire story of the movie, into a musical. So you've got songs for every general segment, and it's very artistic in the way that you actually see the performers, but they're all holding large puppet interpretations of the characters. So you both have the ability to see performers and the puppeteering aspect at the same time while watching this.
Okay, and it works really, really well. It's almost a little weird to think about them, that you're seeing a performer and they're holding a puppet, and mm-hmm. it's not like the performer's hidden. I mean, they're both right. clear as day. In fact, there are even sometimes where the performers leave their puppets and perform separately, yet it really all comes together very well, and it really does work.
It's mm-hmm. ever since The Lion King on Broadway, we've had this puppet thing going on, mm-hmm. and I'm surprised it hasn't gotten really stale yet. I mean, we've done The Lion King, we've done Tapestry of Nations, Tapestry of Dreams, The Magic Mirror and Snow White. I mean,
Iago
even Bush,
and Aladdin.
Iago, even Busch Gardens has a puppet show, Katanga.
Right.
And yet it's still good. I mean, it's someday we're going to talk about the puppet era of Disney theatricals. But
we'll see. And there'll be people who are saying, how come they never do puppet shows anymore? Right. They were so successful back in the O's.
It's a good thing that the art form is ever changing. They're always innovating the way that you do puppets. So, it's never exactly the same thing.
But they're all done by the same guy, Michael Curry.
Oh, we'll see. That man, brilliant guy.
That man must make more from Disney than from anybody else. I mean, what's the other shows that we're doing? Like Little Mermaid on Broadway going to feature his stuff too?
Plus, he was the voice of Sir in Alien Encounter.
Tim Curry.
My bad. Disneyland, the other park across the country.
The other park?
that's first endearing. Love that always holds a special place deep, deep, deep in my heart.
Much better.
Thank you.
What ventricle?
They're opening a new attraction June? You hear?
Something like that. It's hopefully the summer because Rockin' Space Mountain and Rockin' California Screamin' are only here till the end of April.
Hey, let's go play. And it's called Finding Nemo Submarine Voyage. And I know it has some stuff in common with the Nemo attraction here at Epcot. And since you're the Nemo expert, why don't you tell us about it, fanboy?
Yeah, tell us about it, fanboy.
Well, it's going to be... I think the people who are going to go on it are going to be very surprised that it's different. It's not featuring the song Big Blue World, so only Nemo thing in the world not to feature the song. And it's going to feature the Tank Gang, which is absent from the Nemo attraction in the seas. And it's going to be like you're going on the submarine voyage of old, and Dory and Marlin, you're kind of going to get diverted into their story, and you're going to feature Mount Wanahakalugi and your Bruce and the Chum and all those guys are going to be closer to you. It's as much as I love the Seas with Nemo and Friends, it's definitely a sea ticket attraction. This Nemo one at the submarine voyage is really going to be an e-ticket one. So I wouldn't I wouldn't go on the Seas of Nemo and Friends and think that that's what you're going to expect at the Finding Nemo submarine voyage. Yeah. But also, I would hate you to compare the two. Would be like comparing the two Lion King shows, the one that we had at Magic Kingdom, the puppet show, and the Festival of the Lion King over at Animal Kingdom.
Well, it sounds great. I'm looking forward to it. Not that I'm going to be seeing it anytime soon because I'm on the other side of the country, but I'm excited.
Are you old enough, Captain, to remember the original submarine voyage?
Yes. It was actually one of my favorite attractions in the park, along with Pirates of the Caribbean.
So it probably feels really good to see, because I don't know if you've been on the internet and there's been pictures of the yellow subs. They're back out there. Mm-hmm. The tank, not the tank, the, what do you call it? The lagoon has been filled.
The lagoon, yes.
And people are all excited about this one.
What's
going on over there?
My phone's ringing.
Do you need to answer it?
No, it's okay. But for those, you notice that it is the 25 Days of Christmas is my ringtone from ABC Family.
That's why we call him Fanboy. There's another attraction that's currently under construction in California called Midway Mania, and that's coming to the Disney's California Adventure, everyone's second favorite park in California. And they're also building that out here at MGM Studios, correct?
Where?
Disney MGM Studios, correct?
Is it still called the Disney MGM Studios?
Do they just call it Studios now?
I don't know. I got my vacation planning DVD, and it just says the Disney Studios.
Well, now that I think about it, whenever I get like a book or something, it always says the Disney Studios. Maybe they're actually getting rid of the MGM. I've heard that rumor.
Mm-hmm. For the last 20 years.
Well.
Anyway, yeah, it is coming to Disney MGM Studios DCA. And
I don't get it. I still don't understand. Understand what it is.
You're the fanboy. Tell us Midway Mania is.
I know it's not a Disney attraction, but you know Spider-Man where you got 3D glasses and you're in sort of a vehicle.
At Islands of Adventure,
Yes. It's like that, except with a Buzz Lightyear element. If you want to see the technology, try and go to Where's the Fire over at Innoventions West at Epcot. Right. And it's projection and you try and shoot things. It's like you're playing a Midway game. So we all know why it's going to California Adventure. The question is why it's going to MGM Studios. And there is an answer, but it's not as good as the one.
So there's an answer you can share?
The answer is that MGM Studios really needs an attraction, and quickly, because it's Animal Kingdom is at its heels, and it's about time it got something. And with the Pixar acquisition and everything, they needed. It's good to spread the Pixar wealth.
So they gutted out Millionaire for this, right?
Yes.
It's basically taking up that.
Yeah, it's taken most of those sound stages, 1, 2, and 3, over at, understanding, over on the back lot of the MGM Studios.
Makes sense.
What confuses me about this attraction is when I go to MGM Studios and I want to ride a good ride, I go to Tower and right next door to Sunset. Right next door to Rock and Roller Coaster. Why do I have to go all the way over to the other side of the park now to ride Midway Mania? Why don't they put it over where the...
Well, I think this is the better question, is what theme park designer said, you know what, let's put our two e-ticket thrill rides right next to each other so we don't need to have guests go through the rest of the park, because then they might spend money on food and shopping on the way, and we don't really want that. I mean, there's a reason Splash Mountain and Space Mountain are on complete opposite sides of the Magic Kingdom.
MGM's layout is just really baffling to me. Still.
Poor park is landlocked, and then when they opened it, there wasn't enough room for people, so they just started opening up gates and putting up, you know, wow, the cram doesn't go here anymore, now you just walk through it. The park was just a victim of really bad growing pains, and I know that they tried to fix that with things like getting rid of the whole studio section and everything, you know, the reason the park existed. But what are you going to do? I mean, we're not going to just sort of gut the thing.
Right.
Now, Finding Nemo, Midway Mania, all of that is all very exciting, woohoo, but there's been one story that has captivated the Disney fans this week, and that is Tigger. And something that I'm sure we've all heard about was a little incident with Tigger and a guest that's gotten more media play than it ever deserved. We don't know what happened. From my untrained eyes, it looks like someone's doing something to Tigger, and Tigger is doing what he needs to do to defend himself or perhaps even survive. I imagine it's not all that comfortable being Tigger all the time.
It looks very reaction-based rather than anything.
Yeah, and it wasn't even that hard a hit. And it's funny to see a lot of the media play it up as, look how bad Tigger is. And then I think after some of the feedback came in, it was, well, maybe there's another side to this story. And it is funny the way it's kind of done in 180. But it's gotten more attention than it deserves, so we're not going to give it too much more, but I did want to mention the major Disney story of the week, for better or worse.
What confused me, though, is all the stories mention that this is a different person than was involved in that
other thing,
other Tigger incident. And I was always under the impression that the wonderful thing about Tiggers was that he was the only one. And so it took me a little moment, and I'm just going to guess that there's just a personality disorder involved.
Speaking of costumes, or whatever it is Tiggers wear in the park.
He doesn't wear anything, do he?
No, during Christmas he wears like that cap and the scarf, okay. Doesn't he?
Yeah, and during Light Magic he wore a nightgown for some reason, because he wears more clothes to bed than he does... I don't know.
But there was a very interesting story that seems, from all indications, what I've read, to actually be happening, and that is the enhancement of costume characters for their mouths to be able to move and their eyes to be able to blink. And I know when I go see a Disney show at the theme parks, one of the things that I really don't like is watching what we call a rubberhead show, because they're singing and they're moving, but their mouths are doing nothing. And a little while ago, we saw Mickey's Magic Show during the thing they were doing at MGM Studios for the little ones.
Magical Beginnings.
Magical Beginnings from Fanboy Trademark over here. And it was really cool to see characters on stage singing and their mouths moving. It was amazing. And we're like, why are they doing this with Felon Entertainment and they're not doing this in the theme parks? And apparently they are.
I remember when the Lion King puppet show Magic Kingdom, I don't exactly remember the exact title, but when Rafiki used to actually have mouth motion in that too. And in a way, I like the fact that they want to go through with doing this, but yet I also find it a little bit problematic that if you see a show and they'll be able to move their eyes and everything, but yet when you go up to meet them, they'll be like fixed grins.
Right.
Well, it's interesting because I was watching In Case of Emergency last night on ABC, and after that I just happened to stay tuned to Primetime Medical Mysteries, and one of the medical mysteries was, why do Disney characters, when they're in theme parks, not be able to talk and blink and do all these other things? So it was great to see that, you know, modern science has allowed them to be, you know, use their personality in public.
Bad boy's got material. That's pretty cool.
Alright.
Anyway, anything more about, I mean, are you excited? Does this excite you? You saw the magic show, correct?
I did, and it's great. It's weird because you don't really notice it until you notice it, because you're so used to seeing the shows and still viewing them as the characters that when they made them more lifelike, you didn't really – it took a moment. And I remember I was sitting next to you, Doobie, and I'm about 5 minutes into the show. I'm like, wait, he's blinking. His mouth's moving. And it doesn't come – you know, they've been talking about this forever, and you're always worried it's going to come across and look really bad. And it actually – it didn't spoil the magic at all.
It worked. I completely agree. It worked, and I'm very excited about this. Any idea when this is coming?
It's supposed to be, from my understanding, set for the press event, which is happening last week of January.
Wow.
So my understanding is training is going on already, and I hope everyone can go to the Magic Kingdom and see it, because the nice thing is you don't have to see Cinderella Bration to see this. You can now see Dream Along with Mickey.
That's always a plus.
Earlier this week, the head cheese himself, Bob Iger, had a huge presentation. I cannot believe the amount of press that this got before it happened, let alone when it happened. The announcement of a new Disney.com at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. No better place to showcase the mouse than Las Vegas.
I hear they were handing out Casting Scout cards on the street for employees because of the Disneyland work shortage.
I hear that too. What do you think? I haven't launched yet, so we can't say that we've played with it as far as I know, but we've seen the front page, we've certainly heard enough about it. Captain, what's your opinion of the new Disney.com?
The whole MySpace aspect just sounds very odd to me. Why take the thunder off of something that's already sort of taking over the world, basically?
Well, isn't the idea, though, to make it more family-friendly so that I can let my 10-year-old play with Disney MySpace and not have to worry about it?
But see, there's two different ways you could look at this, because, you know, I haven't seen it. So, like, with VMK, they had, you know, the dictionary to keep people from doing numbers and things, but yet people still worked around it. So if it's going to be any way personal that anybody will even want to bother with it, it's not going to help anything. they're going to crack the code either way. or you could look at it the way that MySpace, there are ways that you can make it where it's more family friendly. So if you just do that, then I mean it is. So it's simple.
Oh really? I didn't even know that about.
Well, for one thing, you can make your profiles private. Okay. So if you only add, you know, people that you know, that's all people you'll see. So you won't have to worry about anybody else. And even then, you don't really, people don't usually tend to just go around and, you know, look for people. That's just not how it usually works.
Okay. So, Fanboy, what's your opinion?
Well, my opinion has changed after doing a little research. At first, I thought this is just Bob Iger showing that he's going to use the internet. After News Corp purchased MySpace and CBS did all these other internet ventures and all those kind of things, I just thought, okay, he's trying to show that he has a scheme. But what surprises me is looking at DisneyChannel.com and some of the online initiatives they've had recently with things like where you can create your own High School Musical video and things like that. I think that's really where the key to this is. I think the media is really playing up this MySpace social networking aspect of it, but I think it's more about having your own space on this incredible Disney teen brand, whatever you want to call it, the Disney Channel Radio Disney conglomerate. And I think that's the value, and I think people are making a huge hooey over this. It's just trying to make it more making the website more personal. I know there's going to be a adult edge to this as well for personalization on vacation sales and things like that. It's almost a non-story.
Really? Well, for a non-story, they sure did have a lot of celebrities there to announce.
Well, and talking about non-stories, Disney Parks and Resorts issues a press release saying we're going to open all these things in 2007 that we've already announced, and it's on all the papers and everything. Disney is going to open up all these rides. You're like, well, yeah, we knew that.
It's amazing what kind of publicity Disney can generate when they want to for this opening. Who were some of the stars that were there along beside Bob Iger to open this?
Some of the cast members from Lost, like Matthew Fox from We Are Marshall, and Evangeline Lilly. And it's bizarre.
I guess that's more of this the culture of CES than it is of this actual announcement, because they'll announce a theme park. For that matter, they'll open a theme park with fewer stars than they had at this, you know, whatever half-hour presentation or keynote address.
Also, and I mean, part of it is not just to launch Disney. The point of this press conference was not to launch Disney.com so people would go and visit it. The point was really to show that Disney, while we have had success with internet, like ABC.com streaming and stuff like that, that we're really still going forward with it and we're challenging the status quo.
There's one more topic I wanted to get to today before we get to our 2007 predictions from our experts here, and that is talk a little bit about the Disney Channel and this little phenomenon, which we touched on earlier, which is, especially if you know someone who's 13, 14 years old, there is no way you don't know what High School Musical is. But for some of our audience who, some of the more hardcore adult fans, maybe they aren't all that familiar with it, why don't you just give a brief overview of High School Musical and the phenomenon that it's become?
Well, is this a Disney Channel original movie about a boy and a girl from different sides? One was the nerdy, brainy one with science fair. One was the basketball player. And through a series of misadventures, they end up being the leads in the musical. And they learn that in high school, the cliques dominate, but you can transcend above that. And everyone can just be there. As I say in the finale song, we're all in this together. Very Disney Channel, very sweet. It's a musical, which I think really made it successful in terms of Disney's marketing. And it's become a worldwide phenomenon.
I know one of the things that's come out of it is a traveling show with the actual stars from it. And you had the opportunity to see that in Orlando. What would you think?
I did. I mean, and I loved it because you could really see the passion on all these kids' face for High School Musical. And even I know that there's a lot of criticism that the stars were just promoting their own individual albums, but the kids didn't care. The parents were there doing the High School Musical dances with their children. You would have thought that the Rolling Stones came out when the little TV monitor said High School Musical 2 coming to Disney Channel in the summer. I'm going to be a little sentimental here, but that's what Disney is supposed to be about, is parents and children having fun together.
I've heard that before.
And I think, what was it?
Who said that?
Pat Powers, I think. Walt. There we go. Walt. And so it was neat. And it's it's amazed me how Disney Channel has just totally transformed itself from the Disney Channel I grew up with.
Which had stuff like...
Conversations with Betty White.
It has changed since then. Now, I know, Captain John, you're a little bit over, I think, the target demographic for High School Musical, but not too far. What do you think of it?
I haven't seen it all the way through, so don't ask me.
That's everything.
Yeah, I think that answers your question right there.
Well, despite Captain John's lack of interest, I have a friend who runs a Disney website, and he told me that a full 20% of his traffic comes from referrals from people searching on High School Musical, which, for people like me who concentrate on the theme parks and the big movies and such, just blew me away. But there's this whole other side of Disney, which apparently is geared towards children, that it's just huge.
It's funny because a lot of the hardcore Disney people will be like, that's not the kind of entertainment that we're known for. And I'm like, did you guys see Million Dollar Duck or Darby O'Gill and the Little People? Not everything we've done has always been highbrow and with high production values. Not everything's Mary Poppins. We can do these fun little things every once in a while and just enjoy them for what they are.
That's sweet.
I know. It's a moving moment.
And speaking of moving, let's move along to our final topic.
Nice segue.
Of the day, of the podcast.
Aren't those things that people drive around Epcot?
Those are cool.
They get hurled off of every now and then.
They have those at Disneyland, too.
Yeah, I didn't.
Have they always had them at Disneyland?
Well, they're at Disneyland, but because of story and theming, you can't drive a Segway down Frontierland.
Disney World doesn't care about story and theming?
Well, they're at Epcot, it's kind of...
Epcot doesn't care.
I mean, you can use a Segway into... Basically, I remember them telling me they can use it in Tomorrowland and all of DCA. So, there that you can use it. The man that used to be in charge of maintenance over at Disneyland, T. Irby,
he
had a little license plate for it, and I think he was actually the guy that made that Segway revolution happen at Disney, because he loved his little baby.
Those are cool. Have you been on one, Captain?
No, I haven't had the chance, but they look really cool.
They do look cool. I hope to ride one someday, but that's another story.
Good day.
Let's move on to our predictions for 2007, since this is our first podcast of the year, strangely enough. Thought we could all give something, not something obvious, like, Laugh Floor is going to open, but something something bolder about what's going to happen in the world of Disney. And we've taken three different areas of the company, and we're all going to give a prediction in each. And let's start with the theme parks, and let's start with Captain John.
Does Downtown Disney count as
a theme park?
All right.
They give away dreams there.
All right. I predict by the end of this year that they'll be announcing the fact that they need a parking structure for Downtown Disney in Florida.
You mean a parking garage?
A parking structure.
Okay. Fanboy.
I think Disney is going to end up being sued because they give away only 999,999 dreams this year. Or not. I'm going to go out on a limb here, and this is nothing personal. I think Jay Rizzullo will no longer be head of Walt Disney Parks and Resorts.
That's huge.
Wow.
Would you care for me to elaborate?
Why don't you tell us more about that?
I just think, he's doing a great job in sort of international tourism, and he's been the one executive that hasn't really made a place for the theme park, for his division yet. Andy Mooney came across with his philosophy. Dick Cook redid the studios with releasing less movies, although that's debatable. It's not that I necessarily think he's doing a bad job, but I think it might be time to find some fresh blood for the division.
Okay. My prediction is about an attraction that we did not talk about this week. I think we'll probably touch on it next week, though, which is called Monsters, Inc. Laugh Floor. It's supposed to open up in January in the Magic Kingdom, and then they moved it back to spring. And my prediction is it's never going to open at all. I have no inside information, no nothing. It's just my gut feeling on this one. We've got I wouldn't say another test track. Cause test track, did it open?
Well, for a couple hours each day.
It's funny that you bring up the Laugh Floor now, because you started this whole thing off by saying, though not something obvious like it's going to open, but I'll just go ahead and say it's going to close.
That's because this is a bold prediction. Monsters, Inc. Laugh Floor will not open in 2007 or ever. Next prediction from the category of Disney films. Fanboy, what is your 2007 bold prediction?
I know I talked about how I liked Ratatouille and was looking forward to seeing it, but I think it might be the least performing Pixar film to date. Just I just feel that the market's really crowded. We haven't really done a lot of marketing for it. I know it's early, but I just don't sense an excitement for it. And with Pirates 3 coming out and all the other things, I'm just what my gut's telling me.
Captain?
I predict that Pirates 3 will probably do worse than the sequel just due to the fact that there's so many other big, huge movies that it's next to.
Do you think it'll do better than the original?
I think it'll still do better than the original.
Okay. Well, that segues just fine to my prediction. I think Pirates of the Caribbean 3 at World's End is actually going to be not a big disappointment, but a disappointment. I mean, a movie this big is going to make its $150 million or whatever, but I do not think it's going to come even close to 1 or 2. I think we're going to have something big here. And,
or not so big.
Yeah, something not so big. But that would certainly be a big story. If Pirates 3 is not humongous, I think that would surprise a lot of people. But remember, you heard it here first. And everybody knows I'm a huge Pirates fan, so this would disappoint me to no end. But, you know, I got to call them like I see them.
Yeah, watch it there.
And my prediction for the rest of Disney, you know, outside of the parks, outside of the movies, I think in 2007... the Walt Disney Company will name a president of the company. Bob Iger right now is doing both CEO and presidential duties, and I think by the end of 2007... You're so mature.
That's fanboy for you.
You're so mature.
I learned from the best.
By the end of 2007, Richard Cook, currently the head of Walt Disney Studios, will be the president of the Disney Company, and nothing would make me happier.
I know. I mean, there's nothing would make me happy. I don't know if it's going to happen, but I mean, the man's a Disney legend, married a former Disneyland ambassador, and been with the company since the 70s, I believe, or even perhaps earlier than that. It would be great to have that sort of connection to our past like that. It would make me so happy.
That'd be nice. How about you, Captain?
I brought this up earlier, but I simply just think that my prediction would be that the community aspect of the new Disney website is going to be completely pointless to everybody, simply.
Yeah. Fanboy.
My prediction is that in case of emergency, the new ABC sitcom does not get a full season order.
Wow. Wow. We have watched the first two – well, you've watched the first two episodes of that. I watched the first half of the first two episodes before falling asleep. That's not a good show. What's your real prediction?
No, I'm pretty convinced that this whole ABC radio sale to Citadel Broadcasting or whatever, a reverse Morris Trust or whatever financial mechanism we're creating for this will not happen because it's only been a year and a half or something like that, probably about a year since it's been announced, and we're not anywhere closer to it, at least in terms of buzz. So I think we will still own ABC radio by the time we do our year in review podcast, if we last that long.
If we don't get canceled by the powers that be. Well, cool. Well, thank you both. Thank you very much for joining us on this relaunch of the Laughing Place podcast. I'd like to invite everyone to participate. We would have had some voicemails and some emails, except we just started, so we don't have any. So please email us at podcast@laughingplace.com. Give us a call at 866-718-9408. That's 866-718-9408. That's toll free. And leave us a voicemail. Does toll-free even mean anything anymore in the cell phone age?
It means you get charged for it.
Exactly. You get charged for it. Would be. Or participate on the discussion boards of laughingplace.com. We do have a podcast section there. And please give us your predictions for 2007 in the area of theme parks and or movies and or anything else. We'd love to hear from you and have you participate in next week's show. We will be back next Friday for podcast number 2. We will not be back the weekend after that, but don't feel like we're slacking. If I'm announcing it here in the relaunch, then clearly this has been a planned stoppage, a planned outage, a planned
refurbishment.
A planned refurbishment for the podcast. Hiatus, that's not the word I want.
Hiatus means you're never coming
better.
Back.
What do they call it at Kennedy when they have the countdown and then
Kennedy? An assassination?
Hold?
This has been a plan. This will be a planned hold for
Space Center. Gotcha.
A planned hold for the Laughing Place podcast because we will be out for 1 week, so we'll take 1 week off. But then we'll be back weekly after that, and we hope you've enjoyed it. I know we've had a lot of fun putting it together. Once again, please let us hear from you, podcast@laughingplace.com or 866-718-9408. And with that, we'll see you next week.
Arr.
In the big blue world. Yeah. in the big blue world that I've never seen before. So many creatures swimming around the sea in the big blue world. And all of them are waiting for me.
That's like the A-cast right there.